Welcome to the Startup Grind Podcast.
Starting a company is not for the faint of heart.
They're always questioning, tweaking.
Where we talk to entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and thought leaders about how to build a great company.
Like my friends, like, you think you're crazy.
I think you gotta be a little nuts.
And change the world in the process.
We optimize for impact instead of profit.
It's never been a more exciting time to be an entrepreneur.
From Startup Grind chapters across the globe.
The chapter director for Cape Town.
Boise, Idaho.
London.
Mala, Palestine.
Guangzhou, China.
And delivered to you every Monday and Wednesday.
It's a Startup Grind.
I was recently introduced to an amazing company called TopTal. They've got over 2,500 developers and designers in their network. They've screened them extensively so that you can get to work with the top 3% of developers and designers. So basically, you just tell TopTal what developer or designer you're looking for. They then take your business and technical requirements and find the right person for you. You don't have to do all the screening and interviews that you normally would, and they make it really easy for you. You can even do part-time hires that are a few hours a week or full-time hires as well. If you want to get connected to them, send a note to Laura@startupgrind.com, and she can personally introduce you to our friend Nelson. He's a VP at TopTal who will make sure you get an amazing experience. That's Laura@startupgrind.com. Hey there, and welcome to Wednesday's episode of the Startup Grind Podcast. Today we have a presentation from our 2016 Global Conference with Johan Brenner, general partner of the European-based venture capital fund Creandum. Johan is one of Europe's most experienced venture capital investors who has worked across a broad set of industries globally. He has built a number of successful businesses as an entrepreneur and has also been a partner in several other leading venture capital firms. Before Creandum, Johan spent more than 4 years as a general partner at Balderton Capital, previously called Benchmark Capital Europe, with investments in companies like MySQL, Rebtel, Zopa, Habbo Hotel, and Wonga. Let's listen into Johan's presentation on the European startup ecosystem at Startup Grind's Global Conference earlier this year.
But we only have 2% of the GDP. The next 10% comes out of the rest of Europe, about 60% out of the US, and about 20% out of China and the rest of the world. So Sweden is doing pretty well. 50% of the unicorns in Europe comes out of Nordic and particularly Sweden. And people ask me, what's in the water? How come this happens? And we have great water, but it's really about an affinity for starting global companies from a small country. We're 9 million people, 25 million in the Nordic countries. There's Volvo, Ericsson, H&M, IKEA, Tetra Pak, and so forth. And we have, I think, an affinity for design and pragmatic solutions. And we're pretty transparent in the society. So I think that bodes well for assimilating new technology, doing great design that works. And as you all know, user interface and usability is key in creating startups. So what about Europe versus the US? And just to put this in context, Europe, even excluding Russia that I have here, is in terms of GDP the same size as the US. It has the same amount of internet users and pretty much the same population. Of course, we're dwarfed by China and maybe in the future by India, but let's focus on these two. The disadvantage, of course, of Europe is that we're more than 20 countries, and in Europe and most of these markets is one country. But in terms of market size and people and economy, there's no reason that Europeans shouldn't stack up in building great companies. So what's been happening? This is venture capital, Europe versus US in the past 5 years. And basically, nothing really has happened. US is still five times larger than Europe in terms of venture capital around. If you look at the US, you should know that 80% of that capital is here in Silicon Valley. Only 20% of that first staple is in the rest of the US. And of the European 9-10 billion, 50% is in the UK and 50% is the rest of Europe. So there's still a lot less capital in Europe versus the US. But we are creating more unicorns. So going back a little bit of the last statistics, this is the past 2 years, there's about 3x still number of unicorns in the US versus Europe, but 5x the capital. So we're doing something with our capital. That's good, but we're still lagging behind. And we're lagging behind because it's actually the later stage funding that's lacking. So if you look at the first staple there is about seed and series A, the second is multi-stage, and the last one is series B. There's about 3x the capital in, only 3x in the US versus Europe in terms of early stage, 5x in mixed stage, but up to 14 times as much in the later stage rounds. So that's it's really the capital in later stage rounds that really fuels the scaling to become a global company. So that's really essential, and a lack that we have in Europe. But what that means is that a lot of the US premier VCs are coming and doing those rounds in Europe. So these are some of these firms. Sequoia Andreessen, Vaillard, you may know, this is Peter Thiel's international VC, KPCB, and Union Square. And you may recognize some of these. Klarna is a Swedish fintech company. Sky Scanner from the UK. Skype, you remember. Spotify and SoundCloud, both at Kleiner Perkins and Union Square, very, very active in Europe. But what we're lacking in Europe are the big companies, what I call the aircraft carriers or mega unicorns. We have them 1 billion up to 10 billion, but when it comes to 200 billion plus, they're basically only here in the US and China. And if you look at that, I won't bore you with these tables anymore soon, but I mean, on the left-hand side, 80% of the market cap of billion-dollar companies come out of the US and China, 80%. And the big ones are only in China and the US. And that's really important because these companies are aircraft carriers. They're platforms. The ecosystem thrive on them. They get bought by them. They have, you know, new startups are creating from people leaving these aircraft carriers. So I think this is crucial, but there's no reason that we in the future should see more of these mega unicorns in Europe. So let's talk about Europe more specifically. This is a graph of perhaps not all, but 80% of the incumbents created in the past 10 years. Actually, Skype was it was founded in 2003 and actually the only unicorn before 2010 in Europe. So it took a while until we got the first one. And this is sort of a picture that also talks about how difficult it is to build an ecosystem and how long time it takes. But then it's been exploding, and lately in the past years, we've seen a lot of different companies that also have started in the Europe, but have become great companies also in the US, and I'll come back to that. So if you look at these companies and you spread them by sector, on the left-hand side, you see retail, financial services, enterprise applications, gaming, and so forth. They're all across these, so it's not like one area. But if you look at this in detail, you can find that retail, for instance, only come from the large countries, so Germany, UK, France, whereas more innovation, if I dare say so, and software comes from the smaller countries. And if you look at the consumer versus enterprise unicorns, it's mostly consumer versus enterprise. And I think that has to do with that the US market is still and I think will be the biggest market for enterprise software and software as a service, and it takes some time before the companies coming from Europe can grow into the US market. But I think it's important that it's not only some areas, but the unicorns come from not only consumer and software. There are some statistics around also how countries differ in terms of speed of going international. Actually, if you look back 10 years, if you come from if you make a startup in a country that's less than 40 or 50 million people, you're twice as fast going international versus a company that started in a larger country. So size really matters in terms of that small countries helps you go international to be successful earlier. And you've heard the PayPal mafia in the US, and as we create these unicorns, it's really important for the ecosystem because they sort of become their own mafia. So from Skype and Tradeubler and LoveFilm and Criteo, Skype, you all remember what it was. It is Tradeubler, an affiliate network, come out of Sweden. LoveFilm was an early Netflix copy or similar company to Netflix in the UK. And Criteo out of Paris, retargeting software company. All of these companies have now fostered new startups, angels, and actually VCs. Some of the most successful VCs in Europe come from this mafia. But let's talk a little bit more about the European unicorns, and these are some of them. And in fact, if you look at these that have now come quite far, many of them have now gone into the U.S. on the fintech side, TransferWise, Funding Circle, Klarna recently went into the U.S. On the retail side, HelloFresh is here in the U.S. On the consumer side, you recognize some of these companies. Avito is in Russia, of course, but FanDuel and Spotify is in the U.S. And all of these software companies, of course, had a huge success and was actually the foundation for the success coming into the U.S. So Spotify, the history of Spotify, and we can spend an hour on this, but it was started 2006 in Stockholm. The first beta came out in 2007. We were lucky enough to invest in 2008. In 2009, they had 1 million active users. In 2010, 10 million. And today, the public figures that they have, this is over 20 million subscribers, 75 million users, 30 million songs, and 2 billion playlists in 58 countries, and they've paid $3 billion to rights holders. They've got about $1.5 billion since we invested and valued above $8 billion. This company was, you know, it's a typical example where you have a founding team that are serial entrepreneurs. They had a passion for music. They saw a big problem, had a flair for design and usability. But that company could not have started, I think, in many other countries than Sweden. When they started, the world was not mature for streaming music. The labels were not. If they would have gone into the US at that time, they would have failed. So Sweden was a very small market, a test market. And on the other hand, since the label contracts and agreements were so difficult in other markets, it was hard for competitors to come around. So they basically executed this step by step. And now I would say it is the largest streaming service. But the key was to start in a small country, and it wasn't the speed of going international, but it was basically about doing it right. This is a London unicorn funding circle formed around or a little bit after the financial crisis in 2008. UK is a whole, financial capital of Europe. It's natural that the fintech startups come from there, and they've also gone into the US. At that time, when they've grown up, there was an opening to create a user-friendly peer-to-peer model and to fill a gap in the market where the banks were not financing startups or small companies. And Delivery Hero is a Berlin company, actually with a Swedish founder. They're similar to Grubhub here in the US, now in more than 10 countries. It's a German startup, very good to German, finding a product market fit, and then basically executing flawlessly to become one of the leaders in the world. It's Grubhub in the US, it's Just Eat, which is a similar company that's public, and Delivery Hero doing this. So each of these companies have sort of different advantages and have different ways of growing international. Spotify needed to do it step by step. Delivery Hero is all about execution. Funding Circle is a fintech company that needs a regulation and also a semi-controlled expansion plan. If you look at the European ecosystem, to end with this, I think we have to remember that it takes a long time to create a really thriving ecosystem. When you're here, you're astonished with the pulse and what's happening here. But this ecosystem here has been growing for 50 years, maybe more. The European one for 20 years. And if you see the trajectory, I think there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to catch up or create the mega unicorns that we need eventually. Venture capital is growing fast. I think only in the last 2 years, there are the double amount of early stage VCs in Europe. So there's a lot of company capitalists coming in the early stage market. And I think it's great for entrepreneurs. I think it's not a lack of capital in the early stages in Europe. There's still a lack in the growth stages, but there's not a lack of capital in the early stages. Great ideas will become funded, absolutely. And I think the entrepreneurial mindset is there. I mean, you know that since you see, if you're a part of Startup Grind, you see that everywhere. But I mean, when I did my startup 20 years ago, people thought I was crazy. Why did you leave your job? Today, 80% of everybody, going out of school or young wants to start your own company. And what we see is repeat founders coming back to start new companies. And we have actually backed, I think, 3 or 4 entrepreneurs.
Quick break from Johan for some recent startup headlines. Education software startup Nearpod has raised $9.2 million in a Series A round led by Reach Capital. Teachers can select from interactive lesson plans in the Nearpod marketplace. Students can compete those plans on mobile devices, and teachers track progress and performance. The content includes stories and games. Nearpod claims to have 100,000 teachers placed in 10,000 schools. According to reports, Spotify is set to create 12 original video shows. The company is reportedly going to work with Tim Robbins and Russell Simmons. Spotify's exact formats are unclear, but purportedly they are all set to be less than 15 minutes long. They will be available in the US, UK, Germany, and Sweden this year. Music video creation and sharing startup Musical.ly has raised $100 million at a $500 million valuation. TechCrunch reports show that users are creating lip sync videos, montages with music, and other things. They can also follow different users for the latest updates. There are plans on making non-music-centric features to address older demographics. They claim to have 60 million users and have previously raised $17 million. Let's get back to Johan's presentation.
We have the talent. And in terms of cost base, if you compare apples to apples, and we do that a lot because we have a lot of resources in Europe and the US, it's about 30 to 50% cheaper to have a startup in Europe. And as I said, size of home market fosters fast internationalization. But there are challenges. I think that as we are several different countries, and some of them are sort of semi-large, we get stuck in the semi-large countries like France and the UK and Germany, and we don't really have the global ambitions that we need to have, because companies can today, as you know, be built very fast. We talked about aircraft carriers. I think we really need them. The scaling part is really still a US proprietary skill. I mean, we can do great in Europe by going from 2 founders to 500 people, but it's very few companies, Rocket Internet and others aside, that can scale from 500 to 10,000. That really happens in the US, and that's what the US ecosystem is really good at. We still have a lot of gender challenges. I mean, I saw statistics that only 10% of the founders are female, unfortunately. If you look at the gender in meetups, 25% are female, so there's some good signs. But this is really a problem. But we as VCs are doing as much as we can to do that. We have started internships only for female in Crandom and so forth. So we're trying to do it from the ground up. But this needs to change. But there are good signs that something is happening. I think some of the incumbents are not active. I'm talking about the incumbents in the industry, media, and telecom, and so forth, that you see here in the US investing in the system. There's a lot of, since we have a lot of countries and local dissimilarities, the tax and immigration issues are there's a lot of issues there, especially in options and stuff that makes compensation unattractive for European founders and employees. And with the refugee problem we have in Europe now, these sort of change that's really urgently needed is taking a step back and get unprioritized, unfortunately. And I think lastly, as investors, I think when you talk about what's happening next in computing, you talk about all the industries that are not being disrupted, you talk about AI and machine learning, can we as investors really keep up? Because there's so much talent in Europe, in London, Oxford, and Cambridge, there's the sharpest minds in machine learning and AI, and can we as investors, are we smart enough to really have the right conversations? Can we back them and coach them? I think this is a challenge for us as investors. But I feel really good about Europe, and for every unicorns, there's 100 other companies. We can call them zebras or something like that. And there's so many of them that are great companies as well. And these are some of them that we just listed. But I feel really good about Europe. And there's no reason, as I said, with the market size, the ecosystem that we have now, and the capital, that we shouldn't create the mega unicorns that we need. So I'll stop there. I have 5 minutes for questions. Thanks, guys, for listening.
Hello. Hi. My name is Alejandro. I'm starting a sport prediction application, a sports prediction application, where you predict on games. We're going to launch for the Euro Cup. So my question was a little bit based on the market size comparison that you did with the States. What are the barriers, since it's kind of the same size, but there's so many different languages? Mm-hmm. So we want to market to Berlin, London, and Paris for this tournament, but then we're with that challenge of there's so many languages and different things that how is it going to be effective or not? So what's your opinion on
that? So you mean in what countries should you launch, and what should you focus on to really get the traction?
Yeah, because of let's say I launch here in the States, yeah. Hard because yeah. it's the NFL.
Yeah.
It's one language, it's
yeah.
English.
Yeah.
But now that we're launching with the Euro Cup,
it's about soccer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now that we're launching for the Euro Cup for yes. soccer,
yeah.
I want to hit obviously some of the countries in Europe with my application through.
Can you launch it in one language?
Or? Yes, I'm gonna launch it in English
yeah.
but. Is that a barrier that has not helped grow many companies?
I don't think it's a barrier. I think you should start in one language, and you should focus on the three or four largest markets in terms of community management and so forth. But I think this sport is so universal, and the typical language, on top of my head, language challenges is universal as well. People understand most of the words, even though they may not be proficient in English. But I will make sure you focus on a few countries in terms of managing the community, getting the early influencers, and getting it sort of virally spread by focusing on a few countries and let the rest of the world sort of happening. And then I would look at data all the time and the early signs and find trigger points for countries and communities that take off, and then go for them and put more sort of resources and time into them, so you can really see. Because in the beginning, you don't know what's going to trigger this to create engagement. But you need to have a really great sort of data set to understand what's happening and where you have engagement and move in there.
In which countries and
yeah.
which ones?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk to you more about it later.
Cool.
Okay. Thank you. Good luck.
Hi there. My name's Jack Maitland.
Hi.
I'm from Scotland, and I'm interested to hear what you think about the UK's should they choose to leave the EU. How do you think that might affect the EU startup ecosystem and the UK startup ecosystem?
I don't think it will matter. I think that, my personal opinion, and I probably stick up my nose here, is that the entrepreneurs don't give a shit. They really want to succeed. They have a passion for what they do, and they will move anywhere, do whatever it takes. I think it's more big companies and others that will have difficulty. But I don't think it will affect the startup ecosystem. I think it's a bad idea to leave the EU, but I don't think it will affect.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, you mentioned that Europe is a great test market for products, and I get that. But I think really what you mean is perhaps London is a great place to launch your product and as a test market. I'm an early employee at Lending Club. My name is Hyder, so obviously one of your portfolio companies. And I think that Europe, UK in general, is a little bit more advanced in the fintech area, as at least within regulatory framework and policies, and the kind of innovation such as equity crowdfunding over there. So for someone who aspires to launch the next a fintech startup in Europe, in London, how quickly could that develop, not just in London as a test market, but to entire Europe, whereas you can have a grip on the European market as a whole before expanding to the US and globally? I find many challenges in Europe itself, like cultural differences and many, many languages.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that's maybe an area where the Brexit will affect, because right now you can across Europe passport. If you're regulated in one country, you can passport across the whole of Europe with one regulatory approval, and that's really an advantage. So, and I think Europe. This is why you see all these fintech startups. I mean, every fintech startup eventually needs to be regulated, but if you have a framework in a country where you can have an easy way of getting the startup going, you can easily passport from there. And I think some of the different European countries have a slight easier way of looking at. So in Finland, for instance, it's quite easy to get a banking license versus other countries. You need to still have the banking and capital requirements, but then you can passport out of across the Europe there. So to go back to your question, I think UK is a great place to start unless you exit the EU. And then I think I would focus on some of the largest countries because it doesn't matter whether you go to Norway or as they can, Denmark, for instance. It's really, so focus on one or two larger countries. And if you do that, you really conquered Europe because the rest will fall wayside, I think. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Eric. I was wondering. Hi. I was wondering if the deepening negative yield curve in the European Union and peripheral nations has had the desired effect of getting more risk capital into venture funds, private equity, and other kinds of investments.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Great.
I mean, we've been fortunate enough to have great returns in our funds, and we had actually, despite the financial crisis, quite an easy time of getting funding. But of course, that's happening. But I think it also can have a negative effect depending on how markets develop. If the public markets go down, there is less allocation percentage, I mean, absolute, mm-hmm. for venture capital and alternative investment. So I think
that
will affect it negatively. But I think absolutely people are seeking, or institutions are seeking yield mm-hmm. in this environment, and they go more to venture capital.
Great. I'd like to talk to you more about that.
Thank you.
My name is Vladimir Berezhny. I'm from Ukraine. I do chat-based concierge, chat-based like personal virtual assistant. I noticed, Johan, on your map that you have all this Europe with Russia, then you separated it, like kind of, it's still big. But
Ukraine was on the right side, no?
No? Ukraine. Yeah, it was Ukraine, Russia, all.
Okay.
If you see some like great idea, which you think could be global,
yeah.
would you consider supporting some business that coming from Russians, Russians being part of the world, and how do you deal with this? Understanding that you have sensitive issues with investors and all related.
Yeah. You mean Russia or Ukraine? Yeah.
Like, you're still like one Slavic.
Yeah. I think it's difficult to invest in Russia. Avito is a fantastic example, Swedish founders, one of the largest now, Craigslist in the world, I mean, profitable companies in this space. So they have been extremely effective, and it's a pure digital model, and it's hard to affect the peer-to-peer model in terms of regulation and so forth. But I think investors are still, given Russia and what's happening, pretty risk-averse and staying away from Russia. Whether that means that you stay away from Ukraine, I think it's less so. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of our companies still have engineering units in Ukraine, so we trust you, you perform well. I think there's historic relationships with Ukraine, so I think it's easier for us to back a Ukraine startup than a Russian one.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Grant. Thank you, Greg, for your presentation.
Thank you.
So BlaBlaCar launched in Paris, became a European unicorn, and then they expanded to other countries like Mexico. Why do you think they haven't expanded to the United States?
I think for comparative reasons. I think they try to find markets where they can, with less capital, conquer them. I think they eventually would go into the US. There's no reason not. I don't know their agenda, really, but I'm just guessing. But I think in this case, you try to select markets that are large enough, but that with less capital can be effective. And then at a certain stage, you move into the US. This is similar to a lot of companies, like also Spotify now. It took Spotify 3-4 years before they went into the US. And conquered 10 other countries before that.
Sure. Cool. Thank you.
I was recently introduced to an amazing company called TopTal. They've got over 2,500 developers and designers in their network. They've screened them extensively so that you can get to work with the top 3% of developers and designers. So basically, you just tell TopTal what developer or designer you're looking for. They then take your business and technical requirements and find the right person for you. You don't have to do all the screening and interviews that you normally would, and they make it really easy for you. You can even do part-time hires that are a few hours a week or full-time hires as well. If you want to get connected to them, send a note to Laura@startupgrind.com, and she can personally introduce you to our friend Nelson. He's a VP at TopTal who will make sure you get an amazing experience. That's LAURA@startupgrind.com.